Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I love that little growl he does there in it. Roy Orbison, Pretty Woman. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, August the 3rd, and we got a lot going on. Boy, oh boy, do we have a lot. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Sarah Perry of the Heritage Foundation about litigation in certain states that would put a hold on enacting pro-life laws now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. So stay tuned for that. I think you're going to find it pretty interesting. And the head of the United Nations says that we are just one step away from nuclear annihilation. That's from the head of the UN. That kind of scares me a little bit. We're going to take a look into that scenario a little bit deeper. So stay tuned for that. And why are Hispanics flocking in droves to the Republican Party and away from the Democrats? We're going to take an in-depth look at that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, we have a good one. The top 10 longest-serving members of Congress that are still there. Yes, indeed. So stay tuned for that as well. By the way, we want to thank Andrew's Master Barbershop for all these years. Andrew has been with us. He's taking a little, what do you call it, when you're a little R&R from us. He's been an amazing man, great barber, great friend of mine, and he's going to take a little hiatus for a while. So we will miss him, but we will not forget him. Andrew's Master Barbershop. And guys, you want the best haircut in Tampa Bay, believe me. Get over there. It's 727-733-3773. Also, don't forget to listen to Senior Voice America. That is on Monday through Friday. It precedes our show. It's on from 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Tim Bryce, Berkeley Badger, all those wonderful women. Get on there with them. It's a real joy. Senior Voice America. All right. Well, this is kind of a scary thing. The United Nations head, Secretary General Antonio Guterres, says that humanity is just one misunderstanding and one miscalculation away from nuclear annihilation. And he mentions the war in Ukraine, the nuclear threats in Asia, the Iranian situation, the Middle East. Now, he gave that dire warning at the opening of a long-delayed high-level meeting to review the 50-year-old treaty that is aimed at preventing the spread of nuclear weapons. That is a very hard thing to do, is it not? We're trying to stop it right now in Iran. It does not seem like we're succeeding. And we wonder if we really know what's going on with Iran. I think Israel keeps a closer eye on that one than we do. And maybe that's what the United States is thinking. You know, Israel has much more to lose if Iran gets a nuclear weapon. So it might be Israel that would be the check, or whatever you want to call it, on the board for that one. But Guterres goes on to say the danger of increasing nuclear threats and a nuclear catastrophe has been raised not only by him, but by the United States, Japan, Germany, and many others that were speaking to review progress and agree to future steps. Here's Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. He said North Korea is preparing to conduct its seventh nuclear test. He says Iran has either been unwilling or unable to accept a deal in return to return to the 2015 nuclear agreement. And Russia, right now, with what they are doing in Ukraine and their nuclear saber rattling. So I think you might be right. You know, they used to have this doomsday clock, and they keep moving the finger, that minute hand closer and closer to the 12. I think it's gotten very close there. We got to be worried a little bit, I suppose.
Well, I think we've always been, ever since the superpowers have had nuclear weapons, we've always been under that threat.
Yeah.
I mean, the Kennedy, the missile crisis and everything back then. I wasn't alive then, but...
I was.
But... I
remember going to bed that night worrying about.
Listen, there's going to be a lot of kickback if somebody launches a nuke. Look at Russia. Russia could end that war anytime they want by just firing a nuke and Ukraine is done. But the kickback from the rest of the world would be probably unforeseen. Mm-hmm. I think there will be an incident. I think it'll be a smaller scale. There could be something by the wake of Iran doing something, and Israel having to defend itself. North Korea. I think he's got a little sense in him that he can fire off all those things all he wants into an empty ocean, but when you hit something. There's repercussions from it.
And
Trump made it very clear that that would be a parking lot of the future if anything happened like that.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think, I think you're right. I'm hoping that we're never going to have an issue like this. I don't see how you put the genie back in the bottle. I don't see how you take away nuclear weapons, really. Because you can't trust anybody else to take them away.
You can't.
That's the age-old issue. Ever since we developed in the 40s the atom bomb to end World War II, we have never been able to figure out how to keep that nuclear weapon from getting worse and getting in more hands. And that's just the honest. Now, how are you going to stop? How are you going to convince Iran or North Korea or Russia or anybody? You know, Pakistan's got atomic nuclear capabilities.
I mean, a nuclear weapon is more of a deterrent than a weapon.
Right.
I mean, because you have one.
Right.
You know, and nobody has just one. You know, you just don't fire it off and that's it. I mean, the U.S., Russia, China could fire them all off and we'd all be gone. You know? But that would just take a catastrophic event for something like that to happen.
Yeah.
And
well, we got to just keep praying that it never does and keep fighting to make sure it never does. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Sarah Perry of the Heritage Foundation is going to join us. We're going to talk about some litigation in some state courts that would put pro-life laws on hold.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Berhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Berhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I took my troubles down to Madam Ruth. You know that gypsy with the gold cap too.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday, Freedom Works, and delighted to have back Sarah Perry, who is a senior legal fellow at the Meeks Center. It's a division of the Great Heritage Foundation. And she has done a piece, I think along with a colleague of hers, for the Daily Signal. Litigation in state courts puts pro-life laws on hold. Sarah, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And this is becoming a very interesting situation. Ever since Roe versus Wade was overturned, and now the states are looking at doing certain things. In fact, I believe there was a, you may know more about this than I do, there was a vote in Kansas to uphold the current rules that are governing that state. Now, Kansas is normally considered a very deep red state, but they apparently have struck down a proposed constitutional amendment that would remove language enshrining abortion. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, and unfortunately, the ballot measure was very significantly defeated by a margin of 63-37. Very disappointing outcome, but I will tell you that it was a result of a two-year battle and a very well-funded pro-abortion lobby that's been working for quite some time, even prior to the Supreme Court taking up the Dobbs decision, to fund the defeat of that particular measure, which would have allowed the legislature to go back to the issue of regulating abortion. It actually ties the hands of the legislature by clarifying that abortion is a right held in by all of the individuals in Kansas themselves. So it's a disappointing outcome, but I think for the pro-life community, we are committed to sort of redoubling our efforts to make sure that the culture of life is protected and making sure that we can get out ahead of issues and sort of campaigns like this, which are a natural outcome, I think, of sending the issues back to the legislatures in the first place.
Yeah, but what scares me, Sarah, is that Kansas is considered a very red state, a very conservative state. I would have thought if this is kind of the scenario that voters will be handed a referendum to decide whether or not they want the legislature to become involved, do you think that that kind of a scenario bodes well for the pro-choicers more than the pro-lifers?
Well, I would say right now that unfortunately what we're up against is a very big bank account. We know how well-funded Planned Parenthood is, and they are the biggest abortion mill in the nation. They've purportedly represented themselves as purveyors of women's health care, but we know abortion is not health care. And this is something that we're going to have to go up against because it's a messaging issue and it's a funding issue. But this is where we knew that the advancement of this particular campaign, this battle was going to go next, which was into the state legislatures, where once again, after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court said your elected representatives should have the power to be able to legislate on things like this. So we know that it's a state-by-state analysis, and our legal scholars, myself included, are evaluating a number of bills on a daily basis that are coming in through these legislatures. And it's not as dire as one might seem just coming from a deep red state like Kansas. This is, again, the result of a battle that started back in 2020. So again, it was well-funded. They had sort of a jump on what the Supreme Court even decided to do in taking up a case that could have overturned Roe versus Wade. So we're hopeful that because there were some very unique factors at play here, that we will see more successes as opposed to failures in the future.
Indeed. We're talking with Sarah Perry. She is a senior legal fellow at the Great Heritage Foundation's Mies Center. And you've penned a piece, Sarah, again in the Daily Signal about how litigation in these state courts are putting a slowdown or even a hold on pro-life laws. And in particular, you are saying that pro-choicers are changing venues. They're arguing in state courts that pro-life laws violate the state constitutions. And you bring up two issues, two states, Wyoming and North Dakota. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is, again, sort of the anticipated outcome of the Dobbs decision. And I will say it's sort of a function of the messy nature of democracy. So I'll begin by saying that. But in these particular state battles in Wyoming and in North Dakota, now the question is whether or not the state constitutions protect a right to life or protect a right to abortion. Obviously, the Supreme Court's made clear there is no federal right to abortion in the Constitution, and so it has sent that issue back to the legislatures. And these now litigation efforts are essentially saying on both sides of the fence, either there is a right to life affirmatively or there is a right to abortion. And they are coming up specifically because of the trigger bans that were in place both in Wyoming and in North Dakota, both of which were signed into law that were enacted to essentially become enforced the minute that Roe was overturned. One of them specifically goes to the questions of whatever the state constitution says regarding what a right to life or a right to safety and general welfare means in the Wyoming constitution. And in North Dakota, the bill signed by the governor there allowed the imposition of the judgment 30 days after the Dobbs decision. Well, some sort of tricky Supreme Court rules which make a judgment final 25 days after the Supreme Court's ruling is now the crux of the issue there. And so pro-abortionists, the abortion lobby, have argued essentially the law can't be in place because the governor's signature and the governor's bill there distinctly said that the abortion restriction would not come into play until 30 days after. So you see what a hair-splitting...
Yeah, it's a technicality.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It sure is.
So I'm looking here at issue in Wyoming, and as you write, Wyoming enacted a statute that prohibited abortion after the embryo had reached viability, except to basically preserve the life of a woman, I think. Now,
yeah.
The word, here's where it gets a little sticky. Her life or health. The word health, as you well know, has been used to promote the idea that an abortion can be done because, you know, it could be the mental health. It could be, you know, something that really has nothing to do with the life of the mother. And that's where I guess it gets a little bit sticky in Wyoming. Is that not true?
No, that is true. But what we see now with overruling all of not only just Roe, but the progeny of cases that resulted from it leading up to Planned Parenthood, the Casey and beyond, those particular iterations about whether or not health and welfare of a woman, particularly health, which has included, rightly identified, as emotional health, mental health, is now sort of sent to history's dustbin. So it won't be a compelling constitutional argument in the state of Wyoming. Now what we're doing is looking at the sort of reasonable and necessary restrictions protecting the health and general welfare of the people. So that, to me, is going to change the calculus on this. Because Wyoming, the courts there are not going to be able to look specifically at the mental health of the mother, because that entire line of cases has just been overruled. They're going to look at the life, the health, and general welfare of the people of the state of Wyoming. So they're going to take sort of a broader lens on this. Does that affirmatively create a right to life, to protect the health and general welfare of Wyoming citizens? And that's going to be a big question for the court.
Yeah. So there's four women and two nonprofits that are filing suit. They say that this law is going to violate the Constitution itself. So we're going to get into the weeds a little bit about what the Constitution says. And you say here, particular section of the Constitution says each competent adult shall have the right to make his or her own health care decisions. Competent adult. And but then it says that same provision says that the legislature can impose reasonable and necessary restrictions to, I guess this is where they say they're allowed to do this, to protect the health and general welfare of the people, including, I suppose, the unborn people is what they would say. Is that right?
That's exactly it. And that's going to be a question for state constitutional interpretation in the court. So essentially, you have two provisions of the Constitution. One's being argued by the pro-life interest. One's being argued by the pro-abortion interest. You and I both know very well, Paul, that this is not a health care issue. Abortion is not health care. Health care, by its very definition, is a necessary.
I'd call it anti-health care.
You got it. That's exactly it. Certainly for the life of the unborn child, I will tell you that.
I don't think it does the mother any good either from a medical standpoint.
Oh, that's exactly it. And we know precisely that it is safer to carry a child to term than it is to have an abortion. These are two provisions in the state constitution that are going to be subject to interpretation, and those are precisely for the legislature to ultimately grapple with once the court determines one way or the other what the answer is. But it is a question right now in the court, and even the Supreme Court, if you remember, the Texas heartbeat law went three times up to the Supreme Court this past term, and three times it was kicked back down to the state, and the Supreme Court said, listen, this is a question for your state. State law issues are specifically to be determined by state courts, and that's precisely what's happening here in Wyoming.
Yeah, it seems to be. Now, in North Dakota, the governor signed a bill 3 years ago which banned a method known as dilation and evacuation, except in a medical emergency. And it's been, that I think is what is now, let's see here, Article 1 of the North Dakota Constitution says that the inalienable right of enjoying life and liberty and pursuing and obtaining safety and happiness shall not be infringed. That kind of comes out of the Declaration of Independence, doesn't it?
It sure does. And in fact, many of these state charters and state constitutions were enacted shortly after our national constitution. And so many of them will take within themselves much of the language that will appear in the federal constitution. But again, this particular trigger law signed by Governor Gordon back in March, actually, before we even got the Dobbs decision, essentially said that 30 days after any final judgment that would overturn Roe versus Wade, that law would restrict abortion. But I have to tell you again, we're splitting hairs on this because the pro-abortion lobby has argued that there's a 25-day limitation on the Supreme Court's judgment, which there is, because after the opinion, the clerk waits to enter judgment because there is a time period under Supreme Court rules that allows petitions for rehearing. In other words, if someone claims that there is an issue that wasn't addressed or something's been misinterpreted, it rarely happens, but it does exist as a procedural safeguard. And essentially, the pro-abortionists here have argued that this can't be a final judgment yet because it cannot take effect until 25 days after Roe versus Wade is overturned. But again, this is hair splitting. And we're looking at an issue of what's called mootness at this point. By the time a court ultimately gets to a decision, the issue will have passed and any judgment will be final. And that should allow this particular trigger law in North Dakota to go into effect without an issue.
So I guess what you're saying for both Wyoming and North Dakota is it looks like they will be able to successfully institute these pro-life laws?
Yes, that's what it's looking like at this stage.
So we've got, I don't know how many states actually would want to push the pro-life agenda as opposed to states. I guess it's just a matter of red states versus blue states mostly, or
Mostly. In fact, there were about 25 states prior to Roe's overturning that were very restrictive on abortion. They either banned it from 6 weeks going forward, or they put limitations on things like viability or methods that could be used, like a D&E abortion or other restrictions, hospital admitting privileges, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But of course, now we see more trigger laws, and Heritage Foundation actually has a pro-life map that is a real-time map, tremendous resource, which I actually use regularly because it's quite a bit to keep up with on my own. That actually indicates what's going on at what point and what states have enacted what measures. It's interactive. It's really a tremendous resource.
Is that something that somebody could access by going to your website, the pro-life map?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Heritage.org, and all you have to do is search pro-life map.
Well, that sounds like a plan. I really appreciate, Sarah, first of all, that you're taking up the good fight. I mean, it's just absolutely the right thing to do, and we always appreciate that, and always appreciate you being with us here on the show. Thank you so very much.
Thanks so much, Paul.
All right. Our pleasure. Sarah Perry. Sounds good. And again, the pro-life map, you want to go look at it and see how things are going in the different states? Just go to heritage.org and look for the pro-life map, thing to click on there. We are going to take our break. When we come back, why are Hispanics flocking to the Republican Party? Why are they leaving the Democrats? We're going to take a look at it. Stay tuned.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street by co-host and financial veteran Berkeley Badger. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back, and thank you so very much for being with us here. It is a Wednesday, and I'm going to be missing the Master Barber. He's been with us for so many years, but he's taking a break. In fact, he was telling me, Ed, that he might even take a little trip, get out of the country for a while. He said he hasn't been away for anything since the funeral.
Well, yeah, he's been taking care of, the old man for
He was taking
so
good care of that that Korean War veteran.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guardian angel to that guy. And so we wish him the very best. We really do. This is very interesting. I wonder how many people, you know that Nancy Pelosi, and I want to get your opinion on this, Ed, Nancy Pelosi ended up indeed going to Taiwan. It was something I did not think she would do. I must admit.
I didn't think so either. I thought that they would find some illness or something as to why she didn't. And believe me, no, you'll never catch me beating her drum. But I do have respect for her for going.
I agree.
Because
I absolutely
and
agree
I think
with
she's
you.
Got more cojones than the president does.
I think
does.
That's true too.
And I think maybe she's probably more feared by the Chinese than they are of Biden.
Oh, there's no question
in my
mind.
Loud,
yeah.
You know?
Yep. Here is something that has been brought up, and I think bless him, Andrew brought this up from time to time, our barber friend. Was there a monetary reason for going to Taiwan? Well, you know, her her husband is Paul Pelosi, yeah. who, by the way, has just been arraigned on a DUI on a that accident that he
had. Yeah, it's Fox News.
You know, a lot of people were injured in that thing. Did you know?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Significant injuries.
She wasn't in the car, right?
No, no, no.
To me, it's not. It's not a story. I mean,
it might not be. However, I must tell you that I have noticed that Fox News is making a big deal.
That's why I was just on there, and they are making a big deal out of it.
And there's a question of whether or not there's going to be a little bit of a cover up because Paul Pelosi is Nancy Pelosi's husband and all that.
What politician doesn't get a
exactly.
cover up?
Exactly. So, getting back to the trip, Nancy did indeed get over there. I suspect that that plane wasn't flying naked in the sky, was it? Did it have a couple of accompanying U.S. planes, do you think?
You mean, did it have an escort? No,
yeah,
I don't think so.
I wondered.
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay. So, here's what she had to say about this when she was there. In Taiwan, our delegation, of which I'm very proud, came to Taiwan to make unequivocally clear we will not abandon our commitment to Taiwan, and we're proud of our enduring friendship. She said, America made a bedrock promise to always stand with Taiwan. And she, of course, there was referring to the Taiwan Relations Act. You know, we have been kind of a guardian of Taiwan mm-hmm. ever since the 40s. It was an issue during the Nixon-Kennedy debates, what to do with Taiwan. So it's been around for a long time here. And she says, this strong foundation with Taiwan, we have built a thriving partnership grounded in our shared value of self-government and self-determination, focused on our mutual security interests in the region and across the world, and committed to the economic ties the power, prosperity for all of our people. We do get a lot of computer chips out of Taiwan, right?
60-some-odd percent yeah. of the world's computer chips
yeah,
come out
so it's important for
Taiwan.
Us to, yeah. yeah. Maybe we don't want those red Chinese getting their hands on them, those computer chips. You ever think of that? Maybe that's, there's an economic reason for our wanting to safeguard Taiwan.
Yeah, but if they were to make a move on Taiwan, I mean, the boycotting of China would be something on a level we've probably never seen before because of that situation.
Happened in the Ukraine with Russia, do you think?
Times 10.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think because of the fact that a lot of that important stuff comes out of there, if the Chinese get a hold of it, and just because they feel that that's their land and they should take it, it's not going to fly well to the rest of the world. You got to remember, China has no oil.
No, China does have oil.
Does it?
Oh, my God. The mainland China? It's huge.
Really?
I
thought China did not have oil.
Taiwan may not.
No.
But China, Russia, you know, I don't know how much they have. We'll have to look that up. But I think, it's the largest country in terms of...
But they buy a lot of oil.
If you don't include all of the USSR.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they do because they got so many people there. I don't know that they can accommodate all of their people with the oil they do have. Let's put it that way. But they certainly must have oil.
How come, if the electric cars have started there, how come they're not using more of them there?
I don't know. Maybe because...
They can't get the computer chip from Taiwan. The pollution in China is ridiculous.
Oh, it's terrible.
You'd think if they cut down on the emissions of the cars over there, going to electric...
But you know that China doesn't care about the climate change thing.
No.
They don't care.
They're making the solar panels just to sell them. They're not using them.
No, they don't care about climate change. No. That's not on their bucket list. That's not on their bucket list. Look at Hong Kong. It's the dirtiest. It's got more pollution in that city than any other.
And I don't know why they see a problem with Pelosi going there. And I look at it this way. Here's the thing. Put yourself in their shoes. Put yourself in China's shoes. What if the president of China decided to go to Cuba and meet with Cuban officials? Would we have a problem with that?
No. And I think that that's exactly right. Every country has the right to freedom of travel.
I mean, it's communism.
I agree with that.
They're communists.
You know who didn't want her to go was Biden. And then he telegraphed the fact she was going. What is that guy doing?
Well, I know you asked about the escort. I know that Pelosi's plane was very careful how it got there.
Yes.
The route that it took.
It went around.
It took the long way.
It took the long way.
Yeah. As to not piss off the Chinese.
It wanted to get away from some of the hot spots.
Even close.
Correct. And I agree with you, what you are saying. I think it took some moxie on her part to do it. Now, she's still there, right? She hasn't left, right?
She's left. Yeah, she left.
Oh, so she made it out of there safely.
A couple of drinks and she was out.
Excellent. Did she bring her teeth? I hope she didn't forget her teeth.
Sushi over there, I think that's, you don't need teeth for sushi, right. Do you?
Well, I don't want her to forget her teeth. Leave it on the doggone bureau in the motel room. That would not work.
Just slows her down.
So I want to get over to this situation, which I think is the perfect squelch, with the Hispanics and the way they're diving, jumping, leaving, whatever you want to call it, leaving the Democrats high and dry after all the Democrats have done for them, letting all these people in from the southern border. Mm-hmm. Why are you not happy with what we're... Well, MSNBC put a spotlight on Hispanic voters fleeing the Democratic Party on Monday. And a guest on their network, and you know it's a liberal network, said that modern Democrats are too, quote, socially liberal. Modern Democrats are too socially liberal for Latinos.
Now, you're talking about the Latinos that are here illegally, right? Legally here.
Yes, the voting Latinos.
Latino voters.
Correct.
Yeah, because
the ones that are citizens.
They may, or their family may have had to take the long way, the proper way, the legal way to get here.
Sure.
And they're upset with the way these other people are getting in here.
Right. And they maybe have been here for many generations, too. You know, it says here, one of the major stories to emerge from the election was the shift in the Hispanic vote. Democratic presidential candidate in 2020, Biden, lost 17%. Of its margin with Hispanics. And this guy says, this is, by the way, Kornacki. What is his first name here? Oh, Steve Kornacki. Okay. Steve Kornacki, a liberal, he said, the trend of losing people seems to be continuing this year. And what you're looking at is the average of every poll we've got out there that's been taken looks like at the Hispanic vote, it's going the way of the Republicans. He says, what's going on here? So then apparently MSNBC introduced a guy, a non-resident senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, to talk with him about it. And the same guy that they're, his name is Texiera, I guess. He had written in 2002... that it was the Hispanic support that could make the Democrats the party of the 21st century. He's now changed his tune. He no longer believes that the Hispanics are going to help the Democrats. He's done a 180 degree on it. He said there's something happening that is sending them away from the Democrats. He says, one is, I think Democrats assume the Hispanics, because they're, quote, people of color, are sort of all in on this racial reckoning that we've had in the summer of 2020 around the George Floyd incident, and generally that they can be treated as a group that is very sensitive to the issue of race. But that's not necessarily the way Hispanics are. He said, Hispanic voters are normie voters. They're voters who are concerned with upward mobility, jobs, health care, their communities, their kids, good schools, public safety. He said they're voters who thought Democrats could be relied upon to do a good job in those respects, but they haven't. They're family-oriented people. That's what they are. They believe in the family unit, and that's what I think drives them towards the Republicans.
Very tight.
They are.
Very tight.
And he said that... Democrats overall have become far more socially liberal, which does not play well with Hispanic voters. And that's right. I think that's it. They have more Christian values, you know. They're deeply religious people.
Hardworking.
And they're hardworking. They come over here, generally come over here, not with their hand out.
No.
They come over here to find work. That's just the way they are, apparently. So, and I hope they continue to be that way.
Actually. The majority of the people that are coming over are and could be great citizens of this country, but, you know, we have a process.
Oh, of course.
You know?
Of course. I mean, I think these right-thinking Hispanics that vote are feeling the same way. They're feeling the same way that we are. I say we. I mean, other citizens of this country.
I mean,
which
I know.
What are we doing without having a border? I'm a citizen of this country, and I want protection, too.
I mean, I'm a little different than some people. After we would shut the border down, the people that are here, I mean, right now there's a lot of them here. There are a lot of them here.
There's about...
Millions. Probably over a million.
Over a million?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? We've got... You know this, that there are probably somewhere close to 13 million illegal immigrants in the United States.
Here's what I would propose, and I'm not saying this is kind of like amnesty. I don't know, but I think you give them a chance to come forward, get registered, and, you know, so we know who you are and where you are, like every other American, and you're going to be taxed. Because the people that came here legally paid, what, $5,000 to go through the whole process of being a legal citizen, an American citizen? Well, why should you be any less than that? I think these people should be taxed that are here, a heavy tax on them, and they'll let them pay the tax off.
Do you think that they would want to come out of the woods, as it were, if you were going to
certainly give them an option.
Heavily tax them?
It would certainly give them an option and to not worry about being caught. You know, like a criminal on the run, you know, is afraid to show his ID.
Well, then you might have to say, look, we're going to give you the opportunity.
If
you do not basically out yourself, then if we find you...
You're deported.
Yeah. You would kind of have
something
to do that.
Something along those lines.
You have to give them a little bit of
they're here.
A reason to come out and do it. Yeah.
They're here. We're not talking 50 people. You know, we're not talking 50 people to put them on a school bus and figure out what's wrong with them. There's millions of people that are here illegal. We need to know who these people are and what they're doing here. Because why do we just assume they're all Mexicans or Latinos? Why do we all assume, why can't they be from the Middle East? Why can't they be from China? Why can't they be from Russia? All they have to do is go down to the border and hang with the crowd. You know, run with the crowd. Yeah. When the crowd says run, you run.
Yeah. Right. Well, most of them are Hispanic. Let's be honest. They're from the Caribbean. They're from the South America. They're from Central America. They're from Mexico.
Look at the 9/11 perpetrators that hijacked the aircraft.
There's no question.
The great lengths they
Absolutely.
Did to get into this country.
That's why we have to have borders. Yeah. That's exactly
I mean, they had
right.
forged passports. They had passports to come in.
Exactly. And now, why doesn't Congress become real about this? Both sides. And like you're talking.
Because
sit down
wanna,
and figure it out
they
really.
They don't want to admit it. They don't want to. You know what the whole hypocrisy thing is? Look at the mayor of New York and the mayor of D.C. They're complaining about the illegals that are being dumped on them. Now, these are Democratic mayors that are saying this. But if you ask, they should be calling the president and asking him, saying, if you're telling me the border's shut, what the heck are all these people doing up here?
Right.
You're telling me the border's not a problem, and we know where these people are. Why am I getting an influx of all these illegals?
Yeah.
I mean, don't blame Fox News, or don't blame
right.
the governor of
for
Texas
showing what's going on.
For shipping them over there. He just wants you to see what he's dealing with.
Right. Yeah, it's coming to a head. It's coming. And maybe now that the Democrats as a party realize they're not keeping Hispanics with their methodology, they're going to change their tune as well. You would think maybe something will make them understand that this doesn't make any sense. Anyway, let's take our final break. And when we come back, among other things, we are going to give you the top 10 longest serving members of Congress that are still there. Oh, my God.
For the sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high, must be.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back with the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you so very much for being with us this Wednesday. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tan Talk Radio Network, and we thank you for listening to us live at this hour. However, if you cannot do that, or you want to hear another show, or you want to hear it again, thanks to Big Ed, you can do it. All you have to do is go to our website and click on our podcast button at the top, and you will be on display. You will see the different shows that we've done in chronological order. You can click on one of those programs and listen to it again, or listen to it for the first time. Just go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Ed, before we get to our top 10, this might be kind of interesting. Do you remember this guy? His name is Peter Meyer. He is a Republican that voted to impeach Trump in Michigan. He was one of the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach Trump.
Yes.
He has lost in the primary battle.
Yes, I saw that.
He was defeated by John Gibbs, who, of course, Trump backed. And John Gibbs is a black man. He's defeated Meyer in this primary. So here we go. What about, I'm thinking about our friend over there in Wyoming, who Liz Cheney. I think her days are numbered as well.
Good God, I hope so.
Yeah, I think her days are numbered as well. Hers is coming. She's due in for a vote fairly soon.
I mean, she's the darling of the Democratic Party.
Oh, my God.
They just love her. Oh, she's the best thing
Absolutely.
In the world.
Absolutely. I think she'll be looking for a job pretty soon, though. We'll see about that. Okay. Is there anything before we get to our top 10? Is there anything going on in sports we should know about?
The Rays stink again, and they're free-falling, and they're trying to pick up players, but they're too far behind, and there's no... I don't know.
There's no hope, huh?
The dugout is just complete frayed out, and it's just horrible.
Is there anything? Can we look and be excited about the Bucks? Or any, is there anything going on with the Bucks?
I actually went to training camp last week. And,
did you?
Yeah, well, training camp's training camp. You know, everybody looks good at training
now,
camp.
Now, what position are you going out for?
Oh, God. So, let me tell you, I get from the car to the field, and I'm done.
So
you know, at 8:30 in the morning, it's already 90 degrees.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the thing. You lose weight running that route out there.
The only thing that was worse was Orlando.
Is it?
When we had the training camp over at Disney, that was the worst thing. And I'll tell you, the worst part was you went out on the field, you sweat and everything, but then the Bucks, God love them, they would cook you lunch. You know, so you went back and you loaded up and had lunch. Then you had to get in the car and drive home down I-4. And I had the air conditioning going. I had to stop like 2-3 times to take a quick nap. Because, I just ate.
Yeah.
I'm relaxed. I'm in nice cold air and I want to take a nap.
Yeah, I can
understand
that.
So it took me 3 hours to get home from Orlando.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'd stop.
That is tough.
Take a little power nap.
Exactly. All right. Time for our top 10. Top 10 longest-serving members of Congress still in office. Okay, Ed? Let's do it. Number 10. We have a tie. Congressman Marcy Kaptur of Ohio and Dick Durbin, a senator from Illinois, have both been in Congress 39 years and 211 days.
We got an age on those two
Very old. Dick Durbin, I don't know. I think Dick Durbin has got to be for sure in his 70s. That's what I would say. I don't know about Marcy Kaptur. But Durbin's been around for a long time. He was a congressman, a state congressman, and he was an alderman in Chicago.
You know, I think we brought up term limits and stuff like that on the last show, and I think Andrew was the one that said, you know, once you're 60-something, you should be out. But what if you had a lady in there like Judge Judy? I mean, she's 80 years old. She's still sharp as a tack.
Yes, she is. I think it has to depend.
I'd rather have her than a 50-year-old.
There you go. All right, number nine. Steny Hoyer of Maryland. You see him on TV quite a bit. He's been there 41 years and 75 days as a congressman. Okay, now the next one, just so you know, we're going to have a tie here. There are four people with the same date. So here we go. Number five, 5A. 5A is Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. 41 years, 211 days. I wouldn't want to be a congressman from New Jersey for 41 years.
No,
I don't care what
I wouldn't want to be in New Jersey.
There you go. All right, number 5B. Congressman Hal Rogers from Kentucky. Same deal, 41 years, 211 days. God love him. He must go to a lot of derbies. Number 5C. Oh, this is your favorite, Ed. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York.
Oh, God.
He has been in both the House and the Senate for a total of 41 years, 211 days.
That's Schumer, the one I can't see. The one that looks like the penguin. I can't remember his name. Nader? Is that his name, Nader?
Oh,
he's got to be in that list.
I know who you mean.
Not Nader.
I know who you mean. He's Jewish.
He's probably on that list. Come on.
Okay, we'll find out. Number 5, C. Or D. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, 41 years, 211 days. All right. Which brings us to number 4. Nadler. That's who you're thinking.
That's him.
Jerry Nadler. Number 4 is Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama. Listen to this. He's been there 43 years, 211 days.
That's just too long.
And it's a combo of the House and the Senate. Number 3, guest horse, of course, Ed Markey of Massachusetts. He's a senator. 45 years, 273 days in Massachusetts, House and Senate. All right? All right, we got a tie for number 1, okay? Number 1A. It's Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. Now, he's been good. He's been a good guy. I like him a lot, but he's been there too long. 47 years, 211 days. All right, 1B. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. You know him? It's 47 years and 211 days. Guys, it's time to
leave
and take Biden with you.
You get too many friends in there.
That's exactly right. Friends, but we need workers. All right, thanks so much. We'll be back on Friday. In the meantime, remember, freedom works.
It's time to stay behind. All I wanted was to hold you. All I wanted was to touch you.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Zoom.
I'm Steve Kathan, Kansas.